At this point in the retreat, probably most of you have started to transition to the end of the retreat. It might be more obvious for some of you. Some of you may be already physically, literally packing your bags. Others of you may be packing your bags in your mind, thinking about what's next. And this is very natural, very normal part of the retreat at this time. We naturally begin to, the conditions are such that we naturally begin to know that tomorrow we'll be at home, and so that comes into our minds. It's very, very natural. And so often at this point in the retreat, there is the question or how does this time on the retreat relate to my time at home? We might have the idea of taking it home with us, or some of what we've learned we take home with us. And certainly Gil spoke to that somewhat in his talk around the notion of taking perhaps not the states of mind home, but the sense of a little bit of confidence, a little bit of trust that you can engage, that this practice is meaningful for you. The teachings on clear comprehension are really a beautiful teaching for daily life practice. We've been talking about it here in terms of retreat practice, but it also really relates to our lives, and I thought I'd just spend a few minutes reflecting on that right now. In our daily lives, this notion of purpose can inform how we live. The question of what is my purpose? What is my highest ideal? What are my aspirations? What are my priorities? What are my priorities? Am I living in line with my priorities? That question, living that question, is living this first aspect of clear comprehension. We may have some particular aims or practices or qualities we'd like to cultivate in our daily lives. Some qualities are more amenable to being cultivated in daily life. Perhaps generosity is one. So we may have a practice of cultivating generosity, or we may have a recognize that particular qualities come up for us a lot. Impatience, for example. So maybe there is a sense of it would be helpful to cultivate the quality of patience, or it would be helpful at least to observe impatience. So we perhaps have these aims or purposes around our practice in broad ways, in terms of the aim or aspiration of our practice, and can we have our life being a support for those aims? And in more concrete ways of seeing in our daily lives particular habits and patterns of mind that we're inspired to explore, to perhaps cultivate some of these wholesome qualities that Gil was talking about in his talk. Having the purpose, right now I'm going to look at patience. Right now I'm going to look at truthfulness. So that's purpose. Purpose can really infuse our lives. And in our lives, this clear comprehension of suitability becomes really important because on the face of it, or on the surface of it, we're mostly living lives in, well, we're living in the world. We have jobs, we have families. And perhaps on the surface of it, it doesn't look as if our life is aimed towards our highest purpose. It may seem that we're doing things that would not support our purpose. And yet we can, with some reflection and some exploration, look at how our everyday activities do support, or can support, I should say, can support our aims, our purposes. And I think this is really what the exploration in the Satipatthana Sutta is, that I read that very first night on the retreat, the exploration of acts in full awareness when coming and going, acts in full awareness when bending and straightening one's limbs, acts in full awareness when eating, when talking, when sleeping, when keeping silent. Maybe not sleeping. Maybe sleeping's not in there. That it's pointing to the fact that our everyday activities can come into line with our purpose. An example of this from my own practice. For a long time, after I began the practice, I was still earning my livelihood as a computer programmer at first and then as a technical writer. And I really resisted this. I wanted to be living a Dharma life. It felt to me that all of my time at my work was taking away somehow from my practice. And over the course of years, I began to, first of all, it's like, well, okay, this is my life. I guess I practice here. So my workplace became kind of like my monastery. I would go in and I would practice mindfulness as much as I could. And the other piece that really began to become clear to me is that the whole way that I could engage in the practice, the whole way that I could go on long retreats, I could go off on a 3-month retreat and support myself, have the livelihood to support myself, was through this practice of working on the computer. So I began to see the work as the support for my practice. It was the way that I could engage in the practice. It was almost like a reframing of the livelihood. It was the whole means out of which I could practice. I looked at my work. My work was relatively neutral in the sense of it was, writing manuals for computer systems that were not defense related or anything. So it was just, kind of a neutral activity. So it wasn't unskillful livelihood. And it allowed me to support myself, support my home, feed me, and take me on retreats. So it was like a reframing. It became, instead of the thing that was in the way, the problem, it became the ground out of which the practice could come. And so I began to understand it as suitable. This was suitable. Suitable activity to support my aim and purpose. There's all kinds of explorations we can make around this kind of thing, that if you're practicing generosity, for example, if that is your kind of aim, it's actually quite amazing when we start reflecting on our activities, just how many of our activities can be seen through this lens of generosity. If we're practicing generosity for a period of time, one way to kind of, it's kind of a reframing again, a reframing of our activities in this, these terms, looking at each activity in terms of generosity. So going to the grocery store, for example. You know, you're going to the grocery store, perhaps in one way you can offer the generosity of kindness to the people you meet in the store, a smile for the cashier, and, not necessarily that deep, soulful gaze for the cashier, but just a simple, "Hi, I hope you're having a good day." you know, just that offering of your kindness. Your going to the grocery store actually indirectly provides the possibility of their livelihood, that they're able to earn a living because you shop in that store. You may offer a ride to a friend, for a friend to the airport. Again, a form of generosity. The Buddha at one point said, if when you're rinsing out your bowl, he was talking to some of his monks, when you're rinsing out your bowl, you rinse out your bowl and you throw away the rinsings of the pot. If when you do that, you wish that the beings in the place where you throw that rinse water out can live off of the food, then be nourished by the food in the rinse water, that's a source of merit. It takes that connecting with that intention for it to be a source of merit. So, it, you know, the action itself doesn't have that power unless we connect to that intention. So this kind of reframing or connecting with where are we engaging, where are we practicing in line with our purpose, cultivating that aspect of suitability and purpose together. And domain may be one of the more challenging pieces in our daily life, because the domain of our practice is possible to be anything that's happening to us. Any experience can be the domain of our practice, but many of our experiences are not the domain of our practice because we're not mindful of them. We're not conscious, aware, alert, clearly comprehending this action in the moment, this activity in the moment, this mind state in the moment. And so we cultivate as best we can the recognition of when we're aware. We cultivate that recognition of this is what's happening right now, this is what's happening right now. Actually, this is a practice I like to suggest for people leaving retreat. A really helpful daily life practice is beginning to just recognize when mindfulness returns in daily life, when that quality of mindfulness comes back. I actually just wrote about this in the newsletter, so maybe some of you read that. That this moment of remembering, the moment when mindfulness returns, it's a powerful moment. It's part of its power. Mindfulness has come back, so it's powerful there. We've got the possibility of having clear comprehension of domain. We have the possibility of being aware, conscious of what's happening in the moment. Oh, anger's arising. Frustration's arising. Generosity is arising. Kindness is arising. So we have that capacity when mindfulness returns. The other beautiful thing about that moment is it's effortless. And you didn't have to do it either. It just happened. So it's the spontaneous re-arising of mindfulness. And highlighting that moment of remembering that mindfulness has arisen, begins to help us to see that it actually happens to us more than we realize. For a moment, mindfulness returns, and we often, with that moment, leap onto what we've become aware of and start acting around it, doing something with it, responding to it, reacting to it. So we don't connect with the fact that mindfulness has come back in and of itself. So the simple practice of just noticing when you recognize mindfulness returning begins to familiarize you with that experience of mindfulness returning, and you start to recognize it more. It's a very simple way to effortlessly engage in this clear comprehension of domain in our daily lives. It's not completely effortless. It takes the intention to explore that, to engage with that. And then in our daily lives, I mean, perhaps we sometimes think that daily life is not the terrain of insight, not the place where insight would happen. Sitting on retreat with our eyes closed, probably in the sitting, that's where insight will happen. I've seen many times, actually, in daily life, fairly profound recognitions. Just when walking down the street or cutting an apple, mindfulness is present and sees something very clearly. You have to be present for it. So the clear comprehension of domain provides the opportunity for that insight to arise. It's possible. Possible in our daily lives. It feels different, the practice at home, than it feels on retreat. It's no less valuable. Sometimes the practice at home is actually where our deeper work is happening. Sometimes our deeper work happens on retreat. Sometimes it happens at home. I've seen it go back and forth. So I'd like to encourage that you consider the terrain of daily life practice as a hugely valuable opportunity.